Welcome, everyone, to Street and Curb. I'm your host, Steve Carvelli. We come to you every week at this time. And, you know, people have been asking me, what exactly is Street and Curb? Is it a discourse for the working America? Is it breaking down stereotypes and prejudices and biases of media and politicians alike? It's a combination of everything. It's a common sense approach to the complex issues and problems that we face. But it's a pragmatic approach. So we reach both sides of the aisle. We kind of create consensus. We do not govern from the top down. We try to build our consensus from the bottom up. So today we have a lot to talk about because we just had a debate. We just had a presidential statement on Trump's immunity Supreme Court ruling. And there's just a lot to talk about. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the big debate.
Hi, I'm Connie Britton. I support Feeding America because they help provide over 6 billion meals to people in need each year. Learn more at feedingamerica.org. Feeding America, 200 food banks strong.
Welcome back, everyone, to Street and Curb. I'm your host, Steve Carvelli. And what a week it's been, a lot of information, and of course, I'm going to have to address the debate. Now, generally, I intensely dislike presidential debates. Most are a fight for catchy talking points and a general deflection of responsibility and accountability. And most times, parties talk over each other, interrupt each other, don't answer the questions. And the only exception this time is that the mics were turned off and there was no live audience. But again, questions on both sides, both candidates, were kind of deflected and avoided. However, there was a big elephant in the room. That is the cognitive breakdown from the holder of the nuclear codes. Namely, the sitting president of the United States, Joe Biden, had a very significant cognitive breakdown. Besides looking slack-jawed in the camera most of the time, some of his responses were basically incoherent. And not since the Nixon-Kennedy debate has a candidate actions and or appearance had such a substantive impact on the electorate. Biden's cognitive gaps will not improve over time or circumstance. It's called aging, everybody. Everyone goes through it. Some people go through it better than others, and some people have a harder time of it. The problem that we have is that we have a sitting president who has the nuclear codes. He's the leader of the free world in which many of our allies look up to. And then many of our enemies kind of surveil to see how he's doing, saw that debacle on the debate. So it's interesting that the debate itself was kind of a big issue with a lot of people. But what's more interesting to me was the post-debate coverage. And this is something that really hasn't been analyzed too much about the post-debate coverage. I happen to go on CNN and MSNBC post-debate to see what the talking heads would do. Now, as you know, and it is kind of a public knowledge that MSNBC is definitely left-leaning and CNN leans left. But the pundits were, you know, they had a variety of people who were either working for the campaign or commented on the campaign or knew Joe Biden personally, and they circled the wagons a little bit. However, they did acknowledge that the debate was cringeworthy in regards to Joe Biden, and it was an issue in which he was talking about that they knew him for a long period of time. But immediately after they acknowledged the issues of the cognitive capability of our sitting president, they circled their wagons very quickly. In many occasions, the commentators rationalized his performance and actually made the argument that Joe Biden should have made at the debate. And it was interesting because I heard numerous times commentators talk about the number of lies that were told by Donald Trump, how it was not challenged by Joe Biden, but they were going to do it on their newscast and their program to kind of balance the situation. So if Joe Biden couldn't do it, his commentators from CNN and MSNBC could do it. So again, they emphasized Trump's lies. They de-emphasized Biden's lies because, you know, Joe Biden hasn't been the stalwart of honesty. He actually tells personal stories that have not existed, but he has actually misrepresented a lot of issues, namely the level of inflation when he took office. So that is like a glaring issue that they talked about against Donald Trump about the level of inflation and what's happening. But, you know, Joe Biden said the same thing, that he inherited a 9% inflation when he took office. He actually inherited a 1.4% inflation rate when he took office. The issue was that the pandemic had depressed economic activity. So that has, you know, led into the fact that there was a low inflation rate. And that should go into credit for, you know, that type of situation. It is a kind of counterbalance to the low inflation rate. However, it was not 9% when Joe Biden took office. But these type of issues were really not played up on the post-debate conferences. They emphasized Biden's virtue. There was one commentator who talked about Joe Biden as a personal great human being, and that he has done a lot for America, and he has been, you know, an exemplary example of American ingenuity, honesty, and integrity. And of course, they de-emphasized Trump's virtues and or Trump's positions, and just pretty much circled the wagon. So again, I go back to the issue that all politicians lie. And when you have a debate and you have media coverage on that debate, everyone takes sides. Everyone kind of, you know, draws up the curtains a little bit to see where their positions lie with their candidates and circles the wagons when things get tough. And it's kind of interesting that this has happened all on live TV. Now, to be honest with you, I was interested in the debate for about the first 10 minutes, saw the first 5 minutes of Joe Biden and figured that this was going to be a train wreck in the making, and kind of like de-emphasize the listening to that type of debate. But it's interesting to see that we have a mainstream media, or supposedly mainstream media, circle the wagons on Joe Biden. There is a lot of talk now that he should be removed as the candidate. But remember, if he's removed as candidate, we have Kamala Harris in the wings as vice president, or did we name a new person to run in general? And this is going to go to a broader issue about the role of career politicians, which we'll discuss a little later, and the role of mainstream media and how the media kind of plays into a narrative that may or may not be correct, that may or may not be substantiated, and may or may not be fact-checked. And this is something that we're going to talk a little bit about when we come back from the break. We're going to talk about, is America dumbing down, or is America voters just stupid to begin with? So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's more on Street and Curb. It's more on the debate. And really, we're going to spend some time on the news conference that he had when he was commenting, Joe Biden was commenting on the immunity claim issue that was heard by the Supreme Court. So we have a lot to talk about. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
The joy of living is in the giving.
Hello there, this is Nat King Cole wishing you all a happy and a merry Christmas and asking that you remember our less fortunate children by giving Toys for Tots.
Welcome back, everyone, to Street and Curb. I'm your host, Steve Carvelli. We come to you weekly at this time. And again, I just want to close out this little segment about the debate, because I'm sure everyone has heard enough about it, has seen the cutouts about it, and has seen the rationalizations about it. But I go back to the question about what happens when the post-debate commentators got together and tried to galvanize Biden's opinions and positions and package them for the American public. I guess the question kind of comes to the fact that, is America public that stupid? Or is it a continued desire of the American press to dumb down America? It depends on the context. But as far as the debate's concerned, and as far as many viewers that I've talked to who watched the debate, the dumbing down philosophy is coming from the media and not from the American public. I mean, everyone has seen the cognitive decline of Joe Biden. It is an issue. He holds the nuclear codes to this country. Even Biden's responses to the debate debacle blow my mind. He stated the other day that he almost fell asleep. He had jet lag because he had traveled overseas. In actuality, he had traveled 13 days before the debate. He was in Camp David training and preparing for this debate for 7 days. So this is a president who 40% of the time is out of the White House. He's mostly in Wilmington, And I guess the question is, do we need a president who takes 13 days to recover from a trip to Europe? Do we need a president who really, explains cognitive decline with jet lag issues? I don't know. Maybe America and American public and electorate really need to understand what cognitive decline is. I'm sure we've all experienced it. I'm sure we've had family members who experienced it. It's a very serious issue. But when it comes to the president who holds the nuclear codes to this country, who is kind of the head of NATO, who's the kind of head of the free world and responsible for many people's lives, soldiers abroad and conducts foreign policy for the free world, I don't know. I think the American public deserves to know more. And I think the American public will get to know more. You know, cognitive ability and the issue around it is politically neutral. It could have been any candidate up there. If any candidate that I had watched, whether I supported that candidate or not, had the cognitive issues that President Biden had, I would not be voting for that candidate. I don't care if their position was 100% reconciled with mine. I would not be voting for that candidate. It doesn't matter what party to me. It doesn't matter what positions they have. It matters that they are capable of fulfilling the job regardless of their political persuasion. And I think this whole debate issue comes down to an individual decision that you have to make. This cognitive capability and mental acuity paramount to your decision in making a vote for running this country. If it is not, and you are swayed by explanations of jet lag or issues that you think cognitive capability can be resurrected over time or gotten better over time, then perhaps that's your position. But I think the American public is not that dumb. I think the American public does know and is aware of these type of situations and should be able to vote accordingly and not necessarily wait for the pundits of MSNBC and CNN to rationalize and draw the wagons around the ability of the president to actually hold a conversation. So with that in mind, I'm going to take a quick break, and we come back. We're going to understand the immensity that I felt that the Supreme Court granted Donald Trump. And also, we're going to talk about, in specifically, Joe Biden's response and lifetime presentation that he did to explain it. We're going to go through it by paragraph by paragraph, and we're going to see really where a criticism and analysis really should go. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back at Street and Curb.
The future depends on teachers. Every day, teachers are shaping our tomorrows, starting their students on journeys that will change the course of history. Right now, in a classroom somewhere in the United States, there's a teacher inspiring a future scientist who will make preventing pandemics their life's work, sharpening the mind of an aspiring environmentalist who will help combat climate change, and generating possibilities for a student who will be the first in their family to graduate college. It all starts with teachers who meet challenges with creativity, who reinvent education for the future, who work towards a school system that lifts up every child, regardless of race, income, or zip code, and to enable the full potential of our students, our communities, and our country. Explore a career that leaves a legacy you can be proud of. Shape the future. Teach. Learn more and receive free support at teach.org.
Welcome back, everyone, to Street and Curb. I'm your host, Steve Carvelli. And I'm going to start out this segment by the statement that Joe Biden made when he commented on the Supreme Court ruling. He had a news conference, but it wasn't open to the media. But he stated, first, in a very declarative sense, I dissent. This is the post-debate response of Joe Biden commenting on the Supreme Court decision on presidential immunity. These two words, of course, can be really read well from a teleprompter, but it really says a lot about the Biden presidency. If you know and you study history, the founding fathers went to great lengths to separate the judicial from the executive branches. The separation of branches with checks and balances is the cornerstone to the Constitution. Now, the head of the executive branch dissents on a Supreme Court ruling even using the judicial term of dissent. Yet we have Joe Biden, who states that he will, you know, respects the limits of power of office, which you can expand de facto that he means to extend to the power of law. Yet in one news conference on July 1st, 3 days before the anniversary of the founding of America on July 4th, the president has pushed the limits of the law. And of course, it starts off with the primary premise. So I'm going to go through certain paragraphs of this news conference that was done on July 1st, and then we're going to discuss it and see how the founding fathers may have viewed this type of interaction between the executive and judicial branch, and whether that alone itself is not constitutional. So in the news conference, he states, this nation was founded on the principle that there are no kings in America. Each of us is equal before the law. No one is above the law, not even the president of the United States. Well, that's an interesting primary premise. It's a declarative and principled statement. But then he devolves into something that has a questionable assumption. And it states that for all practical purposes, today's decision almost certainly means that there are virtually no limits on what a president can do. This is not true. The official acts that the Supreme Court was discussing that he is allowed to be immune to, it's a presumptive immunity. But there has been no definition of what official acts are. There can be always argument on some of Trump's actions that are official and not official. The courts made no recommendation and no reference to what is considered official. So it doesn't end there, because it states that in the news conference that this is fundamentally a new principle and it's a dangerous precedent, because the power of the office will no longer be constrained by the law, even including the Supreme Court of the United States. The only limits will be self-imposed by the president alone. Now, what is this new principle? Is it an unchecked executive branch? Principles lead to precedents, but precedents require a codification. So the only limits that are self-imposed by the president, I don't understand that, because this is a president who kind of usurped a Supreme Court ruling on the forgiveness of student debt, used an executive order and still forgiven student debt that seemed to run contrary to the Supreme Court. It's interesting the fact that, you know, you have a president talking about the limitations of power and respecting the limitations of power, but still acting in a way that kind of just runs roughshod over the limitations of power. It gets better yet, because now it states in the remarks that this decision today has continued the court's attack in recent years on a wide range of long-established legal principles in our nation, from gutting voting rights and civil rights to taking away a woman's right to choose. Today's decision undermines the rule of law of this nation. I just don't understand. The rule of law of this nation is really governed by the Supreme Court. You may not like what the Supreme Court does, but that is the rule of nation. Again, the founding fathers put together a constitution that has weathered, whether you're a strict constitutional interpreter or you're a revisionist, that has weathered the test of time, the test of war, the test of nations, and survived. But, you know, we still have someone who purports someone to be separating of church and power of the states, the power between the executive and the judicial, but somehow acts a little differently. It is an interesting fact that I think that this news conference was more telling about Joe Biden's position than the actual debate. It gets even interesting as we go into the latter parts of the conference. It states, and I quote, nearly 4 years ago, my predecessor sent a violent mob to the U.S. Capitol to stop the peaceful transfer of power. We saw it with our own eyes and sat there and watched it happen that day. Again, what did we see with our own eyes? We did see people rush to Capitol and so forth. But did we know that the predecessor had sent the violent mob there? There is a presumption of innocence until proven guilty. I mean, there is charges against the president for this, but there is a presumption of innocence. And now it says, the man who sent the mob to the U.S. Capitol is facing potential criminal conviction for what happened that day. And the American people deserve to have an answer in the courts before the upcoming election. The public has a right to know the answer about what happened on January 6th. Of course, the public has a right to know. This is what the courts are for. This is what the lawsuit is for. This is what the criminal indictment is for. There's a presumption of innocence that seems to be questioned and kind of overlooked in these type of statements. Again, it's very critical to people in this country that whether you, no matter what party you watch or what party you believe in and what candidate from the party you follow, that the Constitution has certain rights that are protected, certain assumptions and presumptions of innocence that are to be protected at all costs. And it doesn't matter if the president says otherwise. So this is something that has really galvanizes me to get moving and acting on this, because I think that this remarks that he did on July 1st, kind of to prove himself after the debate, are more damaging to him than the actual cognitive inability that he had during the debate. It's interesting. We're a nation of law, and you know, we're a nation of citizens who decide what the law should be. However, we defer to the Supreme Court, we defer to the courts to interpret the law and create laws that the legislature and the executive branch have to uphold. Now, it even gets a little better, just because we're starting off and it's only been like a 15-minute presentation he made on July 1st. But as it goes on, we question even something else. It states, and he also brings in George Washington. You know, at the offset of our nation, it was the character of George Washington, our first president, that defined the presidency. He believed power was limited, not absolute, and that power would always reside with the people, always. Well, the first president, was the first president. I don't know if he necessarily defined the presidency, but limited power of the executive branch has always been a part of this country. It has been, part of the Constitution. It's been ordained. It's got amendments. This is how we operate. So, again, we have a president who understands the limits of power, at least in print, at least in talk, but he conducts himself into different presentations of power. So again, it goes all the way into the end. And at the end, this is the denouement of the presentation. And it states, and this is Joe Biden talking, "I know I will respect the limits of the presidential power as I have for 3.5 years, but any president, including Donald Trump, will now be free to ignore the law." What a massive assumption and leap of judgment here. It is not true that what the Supreme Court ruled. The Supreme Court ruled on a presumptive immunity for certain actions that are considered official acts. They did not define what the official acts are. The official acts will have to be delineated, have to be argued in court, what was official, not official. It does not give any president free to ignore the law. It has just been not challenged. This presentation by President Biden was really not critically analyzed by the press. It recently has, probably in the last day or two, some commentators have come out and said, gee, have you listened to these remarks and how authoritarian they seem to be? But again, the people who talk a game of fairness and separation of powers are generally the ones who act contrary to that more specifically and more substantially. So again, the American public, and this is something that really we're trying to press on Street and Curb, is that the American public is not to be considered a prop in media kind of discussions or anything like that. We have to make our own decisions. And there's always commentary, and every once in a while you'll hear a politician say something about the American public. And it's interesting because a comment of a politician who has happened to be caught off mic or something stated, what's the problem with democracy? And the answer was, well, if you interview a basic American voter for 5 minutes, you'll find out why. And, it is a patronizing, it is a minimizing and a marginalization of American citizenship and voting power that comes to this type of position. But it's astounding that this is out there. And I think that the press kind of perpetuates these type of myths. And I think in this election season, how important it is and how diametrically opposed the candidates we have so far are in this election, that the American public needs to take a more proactive role in analyzing, in understanding, and breaking down the rationale that the press gives about how you view and how you view the viewpoints of people who are running for office. Street curb is a down and dirty type of idea. It is an idea that we talk to the American public who are working class, who are middle class, who are members of the silent majority, and bring them up to speed a little bit on some of the mechanizations of the political process. And sometimes it is overly simplified by the press. Sometimes it is not. Sometimes it is rationalized. Sometimes it is defined illogically and perhaps wrongly. But again, the American public has to understand that this is a very important election, just like every election is. But this is probably a little more important because it is basically, you know, getting to the very basic point of why we vote. We vote because we make decisions and we make up our own minds. We're not swayed by that. But if you watch the post-debate coverage, it was almost like it was their role to tell you what Joe Biden meant. And he is a good person and we should vote for him because Donald Trump is an evil person and is a liar. Well, you know what? All politicians lie. We make up our own minds. And I think that the ruling class and the ruling politicians in this country seem to forget it. Goes back to a comment I made a couple weeks ago about career politicians. You know, absolute power corrupts absolutely, but career politicians just corrupt over time. And this is really one of my cases for not having career politicians. So that's it for today. We're kind of running out of time on Street and Curb, but we're not running out of ideas. We're going to be back next week with some more commentary on the news. We're going to be back talking about certain political statements people made, comments people made, and really getting down to the nitty-gritty about how the economy and how America works. So join us next week for Street and Curb. We're coming back at you then.
It's a bittersweet symphony.